The impeachment trial of President Trump continued today in the U.S. Senate, entering a question and answer phase. Senators are allowed to submit questions in writing for Chief Justice John Roberts to direct either to the House impeachment managers or the president's defense team, who then have 5 minutes to respond. Still undecided is the issue of whether witnesses will be allowed to testify in the trial. A vote on that is expected on Friday. Calls for witnesses grew after a manuscript by former National Security Advisor John Bolton leaked over the weekend. In it, he wrote that President Trump did condition military aid to Ukraine on an investigation of the Bidens. David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me again, and thanks to all the listeners.
Well, what do you think of this format as we saw it today? We write it down, we give it to the Chief Justice, and he asks both sides.
Well, there's a couple of different observations here. One of them is the sense in which the Chief Justice now has a more prominent role than he did, let's say, for the last several days. Granted, he's just sort of reading the questions here, but he now sort of becomes more of the face of the impeachment process than he had, or the impeachment trial process than he had before. And what I've been looking at a little bit is in terms of, let us say, how he's been reading the questions and whether or not there's a sense in which he may be tipping the scales a little bit on one side or the other. And he seems to be going a little bit harder just in terms of not just how he presents the questions, but in terms of, let us say, his comments, in terms of pressing the House managers a little bit more than I think the president's lawyers.
Now, when I had looked earlier, it looked like most of the Democrats' comments were kind of softballs to set up the House managers, Republicans to set up the president's team. Has that been the trend so far?
I think so, yes. And in fact, it's been kind of interesting to watch the questions that when you see, for example, where you had Alan Dershowitz, one of the attorneys for the president, basically make the argument and say that, well, you know, almost anything that the president does in terms of foreign policy, he gets to make that call. And if he decided that, you know, he wanted to do something such as, let's say, leverage foreign aid for the purposes of helping his campaign, that clearly can't be illegal because why? He is the president of the United States. And so he makes that argument, and then we see the next question come in and say, well, what if, this is obviously from a Democrat, what if now back in 2012 Obama had tried to leverage aid to have an investigation done of Mitt Romney? So we're seeing a lot of tit-for-tats going on back and forth, and that's just one of the examples that I saw.
I wanted to key in on that Alan Dershowitz comment and give a listen when the president's defense team was asked if a quid pro quo, this for that arrangement between the president and Ukraine really mattered. Here's Alan Dershowitz.
Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And mostly you're right. Your election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
That's not the only argument from the Republican or the president's team here, but that is a pretty staggering argument. It seems like you were starting to touch on that there already, the idea that if the president views, any president views these actions as being in the public interest, it signs off on any kind of arrangement. I mean, that means if I'm president, if I have this right, I could just publicly shake hands with a foreign leader and say, hey, can you investigate my political opponent? I think it's in our public interest that I win again. I mean, that would be huge, right?
It is huge. It's a pretty bold statement that he made. And what it reminded me of, for those of us who are a little bit older, is the famous Richard Nixon-David Frost interviews, you know, back in the 1970s after Nixon was forced out of office. And at one point, Richard Nixon made the comment and said something to the effect of, well, if the president does it, it can't be illegal. And that was a pretty bold assertion right then. And Dershowitz is making the same argument, and that I think is just historically and legally and factually wrong. He's basically saying that whatever the president does is in the public interest, by definition. His election is in the public interest, and therefore anything that he does, including perhaps what? Things that we might think are illegal can't be illegal, because why? They're in the public interest. There's an incredible amount of circularity to that argument, for one. And then two, it just goes against, I think, at least 230 years of American legal tradition, constitutional tradition, that recognizes the fact that what? Presidents are not above the law, and there are limits on what he can do, and also that the Constitution, contrary to what Dershowitz says, does not make the president the final word in terms of foreign policy, and that our Constitution, which has shared foreign policy responsibilities between Congress and the president. So there was a lot of sophistry and a lot of sort of, you know, word gimmicking, you know, in terms of what he said there. But again, at the end of the day, it seems to say what? The president can do no wrong for no reason.
Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University with the latest on the Senate impeachment trial. Well, I want to pair that statement with this. The first question asked here, this was written by Senators Collins, Murkowski, and Romney, all people that are being watched for whether they're going to vote for witnesses or not. Here's a listen to Chief Justice John Roberts reading their question.
If President Trump had more than one motive for his alleged conduct, such as the pursuit of personal political advantage, rooting out corruption, and the promotion of national interests, how should the Senate consider more than one motive in its assessment of Article 1?
So that seems to be setting up maybe a senator who is on the fence but leaning toward voting for President Trump to say, yeah, there was some bad stuff here, some personal intent, but there was also national interest stuff here, and that makes it okay. Am I reading that right?
I think you're reading it correct. And again, if we go back to some basic principles of law, is that mixed motives are always difficult to sort of smoke out. You know, like for employment discrimination, you know, if for example, there's a classic argument that says that if I fire you because of your race or your age or your gender or something like that, that's wrong. But if you get to sort of mixed motive kind of cases like that, you know, in some, you know, the issue becomes, well, was race the predominant issue or is race a partial issue or something? And depending on how you interpret the law, if, for example, race in any way, shape, or form is part of the reason, then it's wrong. And that's why I'm getting at here, is that are the senators going to say that some noble motive, if there was any here, salvages the president, or if for any reason he was considering his personal gain, you know, his personal reelection, does that in and of itself taint it? And I think that's going to be an interesting judgment question for the senators to make. And with that also, I think this also sets up, given where the question's coming from, that it makes it possible for them to say, well, we can't resolve this issue based upon the current evidence at hand. We need what? Witnesses to help us figure out how to maybe tip that scale or balance. And so I think that's a leading question on their part towards the witness question.
Now, we've focused on some things from the president's side. What has stood out to you from the House managers, the questions they've been asked and their answers to those questions?
Well, what has mostly struck me about them, again, is coming down, I guess repeatedly in trying to make the point that this is the quid pro quo. I mean, I know it's not been good that we've reduced it down to that, you know, that three-word phrase, but they've come back overwhelmingly and tried to make the point to say that this is a president who was essentially selling out, or was he selling out American foreign policy interests to the benefit of his own personal gain? And then again, trying to use examples to show that the president's actions, had they been flipped, had they been a Democrat doing this, that you, speaking to the Republicans, you would have, you know, been abhorred by this. And then again, also, they're trying, this is what's been fascinating, they're trying to also set it up to get Bolton in for testimony versus the Republicans trying to set up questions in a way so as to say, or almost ignore, in some sense, Bolton, or say his testimony or whatever he has to say is completely outside of what's going on here.
Now, Wisconsin Republican Ron Johnson has said he won't make a decision on whether to vote to allow witnesses like John Bolton until after the question and answer session. Here's a listen to him talk about the John Bolton issue last night.
Wall Street Journal has called for John, just come forward, you know, just tell the public what you know. I think that'd actually be a smart thing. I encourage John to do that. Without involving the trial.
So, and other senators, Republicans have said this, hey, John Bolton can talk about this in any venue he wants to. It doesn't have to be here in the trial. But, you know, if there's a trial going on in a courtroom and I'm talking about my relationship to it outside the steps of the courtroom, that's not admissible inside the courtroom. That's a different thing if he testifies not in front of the Senate versus in front of the Senate. Is that fair to say?
That you're absolutely correct. That if it's not admissible in court because it would be considered to be either hearsay or it would just be what? It's just not been introduced into court. So under the rules of evidence, that's not something that can be considered. So here, if you want the senators to consider the Bolton testimony, it has to be brought in. Phrasing another way is that we're asking the senators to what? To make their judgment on the basis of the record being presented. We're hoping, like we would hope with jurors, if it were a criminal trial, and it's not, but if it were a criminal trial, we would tell jurors that you're not supposed to consider anything that's not been introduced as evidence into trial. And so it's the same thing here. The danger, I think, that Republicans are running into, and it really is a danger here, I think, for them, is that if they don't bring Bolton's testimony in, it continues to sort of, you know, dog Donald Trump potentially, you know, over the next several months, especially if his book comes out, maybe other stuff comes out. It makes it potentially look like what? That the trial wasn't fair. On the other hand, if they bring Bolton or allow witnesses in, it does short term. It probably pushes the trial beyond the State of the Union speech. And also, once these witnesses come in, I don't think anybody, if they were to come in, I don't think anybody knows where the impeachment trial is going to go and what that's going to mean. So this is a pretty risky maneuver for Republicans in terms of how they handle the witness issue, because I don't think there are easy win answers for them on this.
We continue our conversation with David Schultz, professor at Hamline University and the University of Minnesota, looking at today's latest news in the president's impeachment trial. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's jumping out to you from the opening statements from both sides, the question and answer session that started today, goes on through tomorrow? What questions do you want to come up before the Senate? What do you want asked and answered? Should there be witnesses like John Bolton? If so, who else? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Cole is with us in Sun Prairie. Cole, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, I'll say that absolutely witnesses need to be called. That shouldn't have even been a question left to the point that it has now. But I actually wanted to say that your guest made an interesting point earlier when he commented about senators, you know, trying to make the argument that perhaps the president acted, you know, in a noble cause, and so despite maybe some wrong things in there, that it should still be allowed. I think that putting that into perspective, or at least the perspective of, you know, as a citizen, we're holding the president to a lower standard than we ourselves would be held in court. When you consider, say, hypothetically, if I robbed a bank and said, well, I'm giving some of this to charity, my cause is noble, but I'm also going to keep some of it for myself. That something like that would never hold up in court for you and I. And so I think when people are considering, you know, the arguments that are made being made by Republican senators, that kind of perspective should be taken into account.
Cole, thanks for the call. David, what do you make of that analogy?
I think it's actually a very good point that the caller makes here, because you're absolutely right. In a criminal trial, if it were in a criminal trial, that mixed motive wouldn't matter whatsoever. That if still, you know, as he said with the bank robbing thing, I'm at the end of the day, what? I've still robbed the bank. Now, the motive might speak to my intentionality. Maybe it's the determination between what, first degree and second degree, you know, robbery or murder, whatever like that. But it doesn't get me off in terms of culpability. But the difficulty we have here now is that this is not a purely criminal trial, contrary to what Alan Dershowitz has argued also. Remember, Dershowitz is trying to argue that the president has to commit a crime. Here, he's probably one of the few people in the country who's making that argument, him and maybe Kenneth Starr and the legal team, that this is not a criminal trial. So here, we could say either that maybe mixed motive might count to get the president off, which is, I think, what the Republicans are saying. Or conversely, I think what the Democrats are trying to argue at this point is that, what, mixed motive doesn't matter, that at the end of the day, you know, if the president is doing something wrong, if we believe that he's selling out the interests of the United States for personal gain, even if that personal gain in the president's view is good, for example, that doesn't get him off the hook of what he's created. He has committed a high crime and misdemeanor.
But to flip, thanks for that call, Cole. To flip what Cole said about, are we holding the president to a lower standard than a criminal trial? On the other hand, does it mean that Republicans are holding impeachment to a really high standard, given the enormity of the legislative branch removing the elected president from office? It should be a pretty high standard, would be an argument.
Yes, in fact, the Republicans are making that. The Republican managers in the senators are making that. Trump's legal team made that also, in terms of saying that it ought to be at least the equivalent of the criminal trial, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. And perhaps I'm going to maybe argue that they didn't quite say this. Maybe they're arguing something to the effect of absolute certainty that the president did something. On the other hand, because it's not a criminal trial, and because the Constitution doesn't specify it, there is dispute regarding what the exact standard of proof is. This is why, going back to people like Alexander Hamilton and other legal, you know, one of the framers of the Constitution and other legal scholars who have said that ultimately this is a political judgment issue, not a criminal judgment issue. And so it's not clear what the standard is, but operatively, You have to have something pretty serious, I think, to remove a sitting president from the United States, a sitting person from president of the United States.
We're talking about the latest in the Senate impeachment trial with David Schultz from Hamline University. Back to your calls now. We've got Jim on the line in Rice Lake. Jim, hello.
Well, I'd like to have your guest give some, listen to my political historical context. In 1974, I was a United States Senate page for then Massachusetts Senator Edward W. Brooks, which is the last African-American to ever serve the United States Senate who is a Republican. In fact, he did exist. They once had one. My point is that this is a political process under Article II, but the Republicans would be rabidly political make tremendous senatorial error in blocking witnesses. It would give the appearance of farce, and I know it is simply the process is political, but these political times seem tenuous in comparison to previous impeachment trials. I'd be interested in your guest's comments or response. Thank you.
I would throw Tim Scott into the mix as a African-American Republican senator more recently. But to his point, David, what do you think?
Well, I think, first off, again, I made this point earlier, too. I think the Republicans would be proceeding with peril if at the end of the day they don't allow for witnesses. That's on the first point here, because it does create that image and maybe reality that something is being hidden, that they're doing kind of a sham or a show trial. And I think that becomes not only politically dangerous for them, but constitutionally dangerous. Second, in terms of equivocating the impeachment of a president, again, as Dershowitz and the Republicans are, as saying you have to show that it's a real crime, you know, and use criminal law standards, that I think backfires on them, in the sense that, remember, Clinton, you know, Clinton, while there was a real crime there, you had, again, the Dershowitzes, the kind of stars of the world, said it didn't have to be a real crime. But going forward, you know, if we're now saying real crime has to be committed, then we probably are making it perhaps more difficult for the Senate to be able to exercise its impeachment trial functions, because we're now going to have to go to a level of criminal justice inquiry, rules of evidence, standards, et cetera, that, again, I just don't think the framers intended, and which might actually make it even harder to provide checks on the president.
Thanks, Jim, for bringing up that call and for sharing your experience there. And David, a lot to watch in the next couple days. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you. Thank you to all the listeners.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He joined us for a look at the day's events in the impeachment trial of President Trump. The question and answer session is expected to continue through tomorrow, followed by a vote on Friday on whether to allow witnesses in the trial. We'll keep going with our daily wrap-ups of what was said and analysis and taking your thoughts as well. If you want to stream these events live, you can do so at WPR.org or flip over to our NPR News and Classical Music Network.